Elissa Walker Campbell to deliver sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews, beyond the X's and O's. Think big. The Big E Sports Show.
Okay, welcome back this weekend to our show. It is time for a history lesson in college football as we will shine the spotlight on John W. Heisman, the man behind the trophy. And every year we look forward to the month of December presenting the award to the nation's most outstanding college football player. And it is without question one of the most prestigious awards in sports, but we don't know very much and little perhaps about the famous individual behind that. And we are incredibly honored to have with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show the founder of the Heisman Group and the legendary coach's great-grandson, John M. Heisman, who is with us this weekend. He's going to discuss his brand new book. It is a definitive biography of the man whose life has been memorialized by the Heisman Trophy. It is titled Heisman, the Man Behind the Trophy. John, thank you so much for the time.
Alyssa, thank you for having me.
Well, one can only imagine what it was like and the research, you know, combing through thousands of pages of the Heisman's personal documents and never before published correspondence from, you know, some of college football's most famous coaches. I have to assume this was a labor of love for you, John.
It began a long, long time ago. I was a young man, very young man, out of college in 1973 when I first tackled it.
Yes, a labor of love, as I had said, you know, and it's just such an incredible read. But before we talk about the trophy and, you know, being presented to the nation's most outstanding college football player, I was really fascinated as I read through the book about John W. Heisman, had to overcome a great deal of adversity early in his life. And he did it with his drive and his exceptional intellect. Tell us a little bit about this man.
He had an amazing drive, and I think you pinpointed it, Alyssa, that the he was an athlete in high school and grade school. He was known in Titusville for just wanting to be out on that ball field all the time, playing what was then a combination of rugby and soccer, something that was very ill-formed and had few rules and rules less adhered to at the time. When he went to school, the thing that he had to overcome was the fact that he had his eyes damaged by some galvanic lighting at Madison Square Garden. And he was in the midst of trying to finish his law degree at Penn. At that time, he gathered his classmates together, formed study groups, and he began to argue all the cases that were presented to them back in an oral tradition. Then he went to the faculty, petitioned to take his finals orally, and they allowed it, and he passed with flying colors. He had a very keen intellect, very strong personality, and very compelling person to be around.
Let's talk about, you know, when he began his career. You know, football, it really didn't have the best reputation back then. I mean, it was considered, what, a boy-killing, educating, prostituting sport. So those early days, it was a game that didn't have a lot of finesse to it. It was extremely violent.
It was a very violent game, and if you see some of the old pictures of the Newt Rockne era or anything before that, you saw the flying wedge, you saw mass plays, that's what they were referred to as, and you saw these incredible collisions at full speed by entire teams and people just laying there with broken limbs and everything else. It was just a very violent game.
How did John Heisman, how did he move the game forward, and how did he help it evolve? Because he had so many contributions to the game.
The many things happened quite on the spur of the moment, but and some things were very well thought out and planned. The center snap, for instance, the way that we start a play, something we all take for granted, was a result of a tall quarterback with long legs, short trunk, and short arms that couldn't pick up the ball off the ground. At that time, the play was started by heeling the ball back or pawing it back with their hands, and it rolled back to the quarterback. Heisman just looked at it and said, just throw it up to him. And that was just the spur-of-the-moment decision he made, and they went in and started doing that, and he was imitated by everyone, and by the following season, everyone was doing the same thing.
And also, another impact that he had with the game was he was an innovator. I mean, he suggested that the game be divided into quarters instead of halves. Is that correct?
Correct. That was a safety feature so that captains could take an assessment of their men at quarter intervals instead of just half, just to see how fit they were, whether they were injured, whether there was something that needed to be attended to. And that led to him making sure there was someone with some sort of medical training on the sideline in later years.
We are talking to John M. Heisman and his brand new book that has been released. It is titled Heisman, The Man Behind the Trophy. It is a fascinating read. We want to pause and direct all the listeners. You've got a website where our listeners can go and get a copy of this.
Yes, our website is www.coachheisman.com.
And John, he coached a number of places, at Auburn, Clemson. Where all did his coaching career take him?
In order, they were Oberlin College in Ohio, then down the road to Bucktel, which is now Akron University, back to Oberlin, then south to Alabama Polytechnical Institute, which is now Auburn University. From Auburn, he went to Clemson. From Clemson to Georgia Tech, his golden years. From there, he went back to his alma mater of Penn, and then 1 year at Washington Jefferson, and he ended his career at Rice University in Texas.
And John W. Heisman, I mean, he was an amazing guy. You know, so many times we think about him as a coach that had a prolific career and as a player, but he also was just a terrific writer, and he had a gift for acting, too. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. You might almost call it a first love, or maybe a close second.
Uh-huh.
But he loved the stage. In Titusville, there was so much... There was a lot of money flowing from the oil industry, the fledgling business, and much of that went into their educational and their cultural pursuits. Titusville had three theaters with stages, and Heisman could be found there in the evenings nearly every other night at least. So he loved performance, he loved the stage. When he got to the South, one of the things he did was he participated in acting troops. Then he formed his own troupe, became the manager and owner of a theater company, and performed summer stock throughout the South for many seasons, and in fact, probably made much more money doing that than he did at coaching at that time.
And his wife had a big influence and was a driving force behind that too, am I right?
And her older sister both were on stage, and that's where he met his first wife, and he always called her his star, his prima donna for the stage.
We are so glad you're with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. As I said in our open, we're having a little bit of a history lesson. We are talking about the Heisman, the man behind the trophy. And, of course, John M. Heisman is joining us this weekend. And, gosh, you know, before this interview gets away too quickly, we want you to recount what happened to Georgia Tech. Boy, they certainly rolled up the score. 222 points to nothing. What happened in that particular game? And I'm sure you get many folks that want to ask you about that.
It was a bit of a revenge game. It was several things came out of that.
Route of the century, right?
the spring before, fraternity boys from Cumberland had hired ringers to come play baseball against Georgia Tech, and Heisman knew about it because he was manager of the Atlanta Crackers, a semi-pro team, and he recognized many of the players that were out there. He was infuriated and challenged Cumberland to a football game. The frat boys realized they were in deep trouble. They tried to get out of it, but to Cumberland's administration's credit, they said, "You made your bed, you have to lie in it." They were literally recruiting everybody they could on the train down to Georgia Tech to play the game. Got out there and just were hopelessly outclassed. And during that time, Heisman actually shortened the quarters of the second half in a effort to be merciful, but at the same time did not do anything to prevent the score from being run up. Later on, he used that score as a way to try to curb sports writers' enthusiasm for rating teams, saying, "Well, so-and-so beat them by so much, therefore they're that many points better than this other team that didn't do as well." He said, "Okay, go ahead and factor that into your equation and see what you come up with."
John M. Heisman is with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We are so glad he is along with us. Of course, we're talking about the brand new book that's been released, Heisman, The Man Behind the Trophy. And one of the things I've got to ask you about is, you know, what kind of coach was he? I mean, did the players relate to him? I understand that he expected a lot out of his players. He was a true disciplinarian, but he expected them to be gentlemen on and off the field. And I know there's a chapter in there and it talks about, you know, he didn't allow any kind of cussing or expletives, right?
Oh, yes. He expected a great deal out of his players. He expected them to, one, be in their classes and be making their grades, two, to conduct themselves well, and three, never to use profanity or to behave in any way that would bring shame to their college or school. My dad used to tell me the story, and I found the verification of it when in a play at Georgia Tech, when a defenseman jumped off sides and stepped on the hand of one of the linemen, breaking three fingers. And the guy jumped up and swore some bloody oath. And Heisman stopped the game, stormed onto the field, grabbed him by the cuff of the neck, and walked him off and said, "Go get your showers, you're out of the game." He says, "But coach," and he held up three very, very angular fingers, I should say. And he says, he broke my fingers, and he says, "So what?" He says, "That's no excuse, and even if we could fix your fingers, you're still out of the game. Now get going." And, I mean, there was no sympathy for any of that, and I think part of that came from the fact that Heisman once played an entire game with a broken nose. He had no tolerance for profanity, called it intellectual laziness.
Yes, and he certainly, as we had just talked about, expected a lot out of his players in the classroom. In fact, there's a story we've got to recount that, you know, a player that had gifted ability with, you know, kicking long field goals, and he didn't make the grade at all. And so what he confronted him and said, "Coach, you know, you haven't read the newspapers," the player asked. You know, they said, "I've got a $5 million toe." And as the player pointed to his toe, Heisman shot back, "Yes, but what good is it if you've only got a nickel head?" I thought that was great.
That was my father's favorite story, and he constantly told me that when I was doing my homework.
Well, I'm going to recycle that one and use that with my boys. Okay, so let's quickly move ahead. John Heisman becomes the athletic director at the former Downtown Athletic Club. When did the club start awarding the trophy to the best football player east of the Mississippi?
They began that in 1935. The board came to Heisman and said, "This is what we want to do." And Heisman protested vehemently, saying, "How can you do this? This is football is the consummate team sport. How can you single out one individual?" And they persisted, and finally they said, "Look, this would be the capstone for a team to have one of their own singled out." And with a few other arguments, they finally convinced them to do it. He employed the help of Jack Prince, an official at the club and good friend. Jack came up with the voting system, and Heisman had the contacts with all the sports writers around the country. Held Sway was considered a sports authority throughout the country because of all the columns he wrote. And so with his gravitas, shall we say, he was able to pull off the various things that needed to be done for that award to be created and to be awarded. And I think that he took personal satisfaction when he saw that Jay Berwanger won it. Jay Berwanger was a fine gentleman, an incredible athlete, and a good scholar at the University of Chicago. Went on to be a great businessman after his pro career. And I think Heisman approved of him heartily. It was the following fall, when he was playing golf, that he took cold, and they did not have penicillin. In fact, penicillin would come out about 6 months later, and that cold went into pneumonia, and he passed from it. The club then voted unanimously to rename the Downtown Athletic Club Award the Heisman Memorial Trophy, and that's how it came into being.
And John, that was, what, 2 months after his death? And what year were we talking about? This is in, like, 36, is that correct?
1936.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is a fascinating book. We want to encourage you to go out and get a copy of it. It is titled Heisman, The Man behind the trophy. And we've been so honored to have the great-grandson, John M. Heisman, who has been with us this weekend. And as he mentioned earlier, you can go and get a copy of this book, CoachHeisman.com. And so, John, happy holidays. They'll be here before you know it. And I think this would be the perfect gift to give someone that you care about a great deal, right?
I agree.
Congratulations, and we'll enjoy watching the Heisman win the month of December rolls around. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
You bet. We're going to step aside much more straight ahead. We're getting ready to talk about your Dallas Mavericks here in just a moment.